He was hosted by families of modest means in remote towns that were closed off behind the Iron Curtain less than two decades earlier. Right out of college, Tim Suchland volunteered with the Peace Corps. They sent him to teach English in Kazakhstan. It's the largest of the formerly Soviet bloc countries, known for its wide-open, windy spaces. Tim found that everyday life in Kazakhstan can be something like a madcap tea party, but with vodka. Tim reflects on how volunteering with the Peace Corps opened him up to the world in a memoir he's written called A Five-Finger Feast, 2 Years in Kazakhstan, Lessons from the Peace Corps. He joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us what the adventure was like. Hey, Tim, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Wow, 2 years in Kazakhstan because you volunteered for the Peace Corps. How'd you end up there?
Well, I was finishing a degree in history and was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with that degree. And I had some teachers growing up that I knew had done the Peace Corps and just kept on bringing that to my next steps. And so my senior year, I applied to the Peace Corps, and the next summer I was
sent
to Kazakhstan.
We'll take you to Kazakhstan. So you don't choose where you're going to go. They tell you where you're going to go?
At least when I was there, it was you had some preferences of regions, and then they took what your experiences were, what your degree was in, and then decided you're going here. And I think it's changed a little bit. You have a little more choice, but at least then that's where I went.
I would think a big part of it is where they think you can contribute and where you would be welcome to contribute.
Yes, exactly. The Peace Corps is only in countries that are invite the Peace Corps there. And so
tell us about Kazakhstan. I mean, I could find it on a map, and I know it's one of the stands.
Yeah.
I mean, stand, that means like where a certain ethnic group lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so the Kazakh, the land of the Kazakhs.
Yes, yeah.
Kazakhstan. What's the demographic thing? What's the cultural makeup? How would you describe the country?
Yeah, of course. It's a former Soviet republic, so gained independence in 1991, and it's literally in the middle of Eurasia. It's a very large country. And to give you an idea of how large it was, we would travel by train to our different Peace Corps sites from the Peace Corps headquarters in a city called Almaty in the south country. And for me to go to my Peace Corps site, it was about 32 hours on the train.
32 hours and still in the same country?
Yeah, and still in the same train wagon. Then it was another 2 hours on the bus after I got to the end of the line.
Now, I understand Kazakhstan's one of the wealthier countries of the stands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the basis of its wealth?
A lot of oil money and resource extraction. That's like the biggest industries, and that's what has helped Kazakhstan post-independence gain a lot of that wealth.
In the developing world, it's like there's two kinds of countries, those with oil and those without.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Kazakhstan's got that, so yeah. That helps. And what did you find? I mean, if you lived for 50 years in the Soviet Union, or I don't know how long Kazakhstan was there, but for generations— what is the heritage of that? What does that saddle the country with today?
Well, it's interesting because I think the Kazakh people they've been around since the Middle Ages, but they've also been influenced by Russians for hundreds of years. And so there's hybrid influences of both Eastern European Russian influence, but then also a Central Asian Turkic sort of influence.
So who would the indigenous people, if you could call it that, be Mongolian or nomads or what?
Yeah, the Kazakh people they lived a nomadic life for centuries. And Russians came in the 1800s, 1700s and set up forts along the way. And when the Soviet Union became what it was, they basically inherited Kazakhstan.
Now, in your book, A Five-Finger Feast, you talk about a treasure trove of travel experiences. If you were thinking of going to the stands, which I am, and you were going to go to Kazakhstan, what would I want to do and see there? Why would I want to go there?
So I think the most accessible areas of the country are the two largest cities. So it's Almaty in the south of the country and Astana, which is the capital, kind of the north central part. Almaty was the former Soviet capital of the country. And so it has a lot of Soviet architecture, but also is a colonial past. So it has old Orthodox churches and mosques, and then it has a really famous bazaar called the Green Bazaar that, as a tourist, it's pretty interesting to see this giant open-air bazaar with butchers and meat and different types of foods to buy, but then also just lots of different trinkets and clothing and stuff. So it's an interesting sort of mix of east meets west.
That's the urban. Mm-hmm. That's the urban thrills in Kazakhstan.
Yeah, and Almaty can feel both very urban and modern because it has a lot of oil money, but it also can sometimes feel like a village because you'd be walking through the city and you come across cottages that are very ornate, kind of in a Russian sort of style.
And you stress in your book the importance of experiencing the bazaar. And I think throughout this part of the world, the bazaar, it's not a museum, it's just a living example of all the commerce and the people and the diversity and everything.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And the bazaar, that's where people shop, that's where they would get their clothing. And
so it's kind of a farmer's market, a flea market, a rummage sale, people putting a blanket on the ground and selling their onions.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Some of the most interesting things I saw at the bazaar was a woman selling a sheep's head on a cardboard box. It was pretty fascinating to see that.
I remember that in Russia a lot. They would have these bazaars, and everyone would be different. I mean, there were honey maids that were selling honey.
Yeah.
And I don't know, what are some of the little intimate things? I remember a lady standing there with a gun. She was just selling a gun.
Oh, wow.
She was busy. You want to buy a gun?
I think for me, the most interesting things were the food and going through the butcher area, because Kazakhstan loves meat. It's a vegetarian's nightmare for sure, because so much of their food is so reliant on sheep and they eat horse meat. And so just walking through that part of the bazaar was just so fascinating. And then also right next door would be just these colorful different salads that you'd get, Russian salads. There's a salad called Korean salad. There's a number of Korean people who live in Kazakhstan, and it's kind of a kimchi style.
Would that be North Koreans?
It was people who were along the Russian-Korean border who were actually deported by Joseph Stalin.
So it was way back to Stalinistic times.
Yeah, and actually, Kazakhstan's a multi-ethnic country. It's not just the Kazakhs. They are the most ancient and sort of indigenous people of the country, but there's Russians, there's Volga Germans, Armenians, all these different people, and many of them were their great-grandparents were deported there from other parts of the Soviet Union.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Tim Suchlin, and Tim served in the U.S. Peace Corps in Kazakhstan from 2007 to 2009. He was there teaching English. He writes about his experiences in this formerly secretive Soviet society, a society that straddles the line between Europe and Southwest Asia, in his book, A Five-Finger Feast. Today, Tim works as a counselor and an artist in Seattle. His website is timsuchlinart.com, and that's spelled S-U-C-H-S-L-A-N-D. Tim, the book is Five-Finger Feast. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I talk a lot about food in my book because it's so important to the culture of Kazakhstan. I mean, it's a connector. It's Kazakhstanis really pride themselves as being hospitable. And so the national dish of Kazakhstan, which is a centerpiece in pretty much every dinner party I went to, any sort of major event, was called beshbarmak, and that actually translates to five fingers. Hmm. And it's a dish that you eat with your hands. It's served out of a central plate on the table, and it's a mix of boiled noodles and some sort of boiled meat. So that could be like horse meat, it could be poultry.
And you eat it with your hand.
Yeah, and that's how they would usually give me a fork when I was...
Here's the American, take a fork.
I was the American, but usually you just go in it with your hands, nice greasy mess, yeah.
Was it a single bowl that everybody reached
and
into?
Yeah, everyone's just reaching in
so
for
just,
the same bowl.
I've got vivid images in different countries of all these hands going into the food.
Oh, yeah.
And then they look at you like, aren't you hungry?
Yeah, it was an experience. And if you were really lucky, you'd get a boiled sheep head on top of the meal. So, and that was an honor to be able to eat that.
To have the sheep head. Yeah. I want to get into the village where you lived and worked. It was called Yavlenka. And you were an English teacher there, and you shared one of your students' videos that she made. Galia was the girl, and you produced it, and what a cool project as a teacher. It was an amazing thing to just watch her proudly show her town off. And, you know, there was military monuments, there were soldiers, there were clunky tin can cars, there was this Soviet architecture, super cheap but still standing. She mentioned no running water, but a faucet in the street. So people they'd be thankful to have a faucet in front of their house where they could go and get their water. And everybody had apparently a small garden to grow their own fruits and vegetables. And the luxury in life was a Russian sauna.
Yeah.
That was just fascinating to me to get that little walk through your town by the local student, Galia.
Yeah.
Tell me a little more about what she was sharing.
So there's actually three goals of the Peace Corps, and the third goal is to share with Americans the host country culture. And so we made that video as just a fun sort of let's share the experience of what the village is like. She was one of my better English-speaking students. And yeah, it was a great experience just to make that with her.
It looked like a simple, humble, peaceful, reasonable life.
Yeah, for sure. My village was actually in the very far north, like by the Russian border, and essentially was Siberia. And so a lot of our lives during the winter was inside in our houses and in our places of work. But during the summer, when I actually made that video, they have some of the best summers you could possibly wish for, except for they do have a lot of mosquitoes. It's the one downside. But so, yeah.
In fact, you wrote that. You wrote in your book, at times in Kazakhstan, it feels like a million mosquitoes were biting and feasting on the soul.
Yeah.
That's a pretty graphic way to talk about mosquitoes. If we just think about going to Kazakhstan, by the way, can you just fly? Do you need a visa? Can you just fly in and have a good time?
Yeah. So when I was there, you needed a visa. However, my understanding is they've changed that where you, as an American, can go for up to 30 days and fly into the country and be there for 30 days traveling.
Tim Suchlin works as a counselor and artist in Seattle. He's with us on Travel with Rick Steves to look back on the life-changing perspectives he earned from a stint with the Peace Corps after graduating from the University of Nevada. His book is A Five-Finger Feast, 2 Years in Kazakhstan, Lessons from the Peace Corps. Tim, I was fascinated by your description of your hometown while you were there for 2 years, and you mentioned life there was like a lingering 90s sitcom, although with more alcohol consumption.
Yeah.
You said the whole cast of characters was in place. Tell us about the characters that were in place and the alcohol consumption.
The cast of characters, I lived with a host family for my first year. So I had, a host father, host mother. They were kind of in their late 30s, 40s. And then I had three teenage host siblings that I live with. And so my host father was a retired cop. That's one reason probably why he took in a Peace Corps volunteer, partly because I think he was a little bit bored. So there was a lot of antics and interesting sort of things we would talk about. And sometimes we just did not understand each other at all, since my Russian language was not really good and his English was non-existent. And then I had a host brother who... he was just a really gregarious guy and take me around all over the village, introduced me to everyone. Everyone knew him.
Yeah, you wrote, in the family, we had the goofy yet stern father.
Yes.
The working mom, the funny and silly brother, the comic relief, the brainy older sister, and the playful younger sister, loud and obnoxious. Uncle, the loyal dog, and the up-to-no-good school friend, and the friendly neighbor. It does sound like a sitcom ready to be written. And you wrote about going to the local bath with your host father and your host brother as kind of an important Kazakhstan ritual.
Yes, yeah.
You're naked there with them.
Yes.
Okay, tell me, when you're in the bath, what's going on?
Yeah, so it's called the banya, and it's a wet sauna, essentially. And in most villages and towns and cities, there was a public banya that you could go to and pay for. There's several different rooms, different kind of temperatures, moisture levels.
And so it's quite developed. It's
Yeah, for sure. And you're essentially trying to get clean because you probably do this about once a week.
So you soak, you get different areas of soaking for steam or heat or plunging in water.
Yep.
Did you have a masseuse or did you self-exfoliate?
Well, my host father asked me, hey, take this thing and scrub my back.
Oh, so you exfoliated your host father.
Yeah, exactly. And then there would be a room where you sit in this extremely hot room that was so steamy and you just sweat it out. And supposedly it was good for the heart. I don't know the science behind that, but... And then they would have this thing called the venik, which is a bunch of birch tree branches that you would whip yourself. And it was just stuff that I didn't understand the whole.
So you're rubbing this older man with a Brillo pad.
Exactly.
And then you pick up birch twigs and you start whipping yourself.
Yeah, it's like, what were you doing in the...
And then you wrote, in your book, you wrote, my life had reached a point of no return, all thanks to the simple task of cleaning oneself.
Yes.
So this point of no return, what was that?
At that point, I was immersed in the culture and just had to go with it.
Embrace it. Go with it. Well, one thing you did understand, I think, was the rules and the art of toasting in Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. Tell us about how to do that correctly.
Yeah, so Kazakhstan is heavily influenced by the Russian and Soviet past. And so vodka drinking and things that come with vodka drinking, like toasting, was a big part of the experience. And so if you were at a party, everyone at that party would have a toast. And you would always do the first toast was to the meeting, to the event, I guess. And then the second toast was to friendship. And then the third toast was always to love. And so then you just go around and toast, and you do not interrupt the toaster. That's for sure. I did that a few times, and I got told to stop talking.
So it's quite a strict, stern ritual, it sounds like.
Well, at first it's stern, and then as people start drinking, it loosens up a little bit.
It sounds like you enjoyed being a temporary local. I mean, fascinating story, Tim. And your writing is so fun. You wrote, "This land of vast nothingness is strangely one of the most exotic and beautiful places I've ever encountered in my life." We're out of time now, but can you just capture that wonder that you mentioned there, one of the most exotic and beautiful places you've ever encountered? Is there one experience or image that you could share with us so we just have a better appreciation of why we might want to actually visit Kazakhstan someday?
Well, most of Kazakhstan is flat steppe. So if you imagine like the Dakotas or eastern Colorado, but in the second year of my service, I went camping with some other Peace Corps volunteers, and just being out on this open space, there were, you know, scattered forests around, and there was really not that many people within hundreds of miles from where we were. And that's what you can experience in Kazakhstan, is that open space, because it's so large and there's not that many people who live there.
It's landlocked.
Yeah, it's landlocked, yeah.
So you can take a 32-hour train ride and still be in the same country.
And that was the longest train ride.
That is reason enough right there to dream about going to Kazakhstan. Tim Sutchland, thanks so much, and best wishes with your book, A Five Finger Feast.
Thank you for having me.
Author Peter Stark tells us about his experiences in some of the most sublime, empty places around the world in just a moment. What kind of landscapes have your travels taken you to lately? Share your impressions in the form of a haiku poem, and we might read them on the show someday. Here is a few travel haiku our listeners wrote that we thought you'd enjoy.
Tracy Lynn of Charlottesville, Virginia, writes us this about white nights of summer in the far north of Russia. St. Petersburg, June. Endless daylight glistens off endless golden domes. Chantal Rev, from Jersey City, New Jersey, writes this haiku for us of a scene she observed in Japan. Neon Tokyo rain blurs footage of their blind date. Wave, kiss. Flirt, debate. And Patricia Castle from Waikoloa, Hawaii, writes this about what she saw on the back roads of Ireland. Tufts of creamy wool caught on splintery fence rails, far from Irish looms. Share your travel impressions with us in a haiku poem. There's a link for sending us yours in the radio section of ricksteves.com.